JG1. Number 12A.
Somebody wants to say anything?
Yes.
Yes, excuse me. John?
I'd like to hold that thought, that there's spiritual values of that thought. But I would like to go back to, I would like to bring that down to the relative and go back to page 88:18.
Okay. John would like us to go back to page 88:18. And that we know was in part 2. He wants us to hold on to what we have seen. And in light of that, take another look at the reference in part 2 on 88:18. Okay, John?
To love one's neighbor as oneself is a divine idea.
Yeah.
But this idea can never be seen, felt, nor understood through the physical senses.
Uh-huh.
So in your earlier conversation,
yeah,
when you related to the fact, hey, I'm okay, but that guy over there is lousy.
Yes.
You would pick up a sense of guilt in that material thinking if you did not thoroughly understand what you were admitting to yourself in that you are God's own likeness. You have to see that at the same time you want to swear at somebody else, you have to put the brakes on right there.
Yeah. We want to, you're saying that to love one's neighbor as oneself is a divine idea, but this idea can never be seen, felt, nor understood through the physical senses. And the other reference, what was it, John, that we were looking at in relationship to that?
The next one, 90:25.
90:25. The admission to oneself that man, oh, I see. The admission to oneself that man is God's own likeness in relationship to the fact that's how we love one's neighbor. Is that it?
Yeah.
Good.
If you're going to free yourself, you better free that.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, I got you. That's wonderful. John's saying that the admission to oneself that man is God's own likeness sets man free to master the infinite idea. If we do it for ourselves, we better do it for our neighbor. That's the family law. That's very nice. Very nice, John. Thank you. Gosh, isn't that terrific? It shows there that what we've been showing, that we not only identify ourselves with God, we ought not only, first of all, admit to ourselves that we're God's own likeness, but we have to also admit that our neighbor is God's own likeness. That's right. That's very, very nice. And that likeness is real, huh? We only admit reality, only what is real about him. If God didn't say it, it wasn't said. We only are working with reality values. Gosh, you just think if we always worked with reality values, isn't it terrific?
With a situation like the problem we had in Los Angeles here when we saw all those vile things on television.
Yeah.
And you were looking at material mining.
Yeah.
And you have to find that separation, but you're certainly not going to free yourself.
Yes. Yeah, yes. So you're saying we should behold in science the perfect man while it's going on.
Yeah.
It's so true. I mean, think of how on television John was saying during the riots in L.A., how one could easily say, oh, look at all the evil going on, the evil people, evil men. But yet at that point, Mrs. Eddy said, if we were one mind in this classroom, we could heal, you know, the universe. Showing that if we accept it about our neighbor, we accept it about ourselves. And I think in your relationship, John, between 88:18 and 90:24 is really saying, if you admit that the neighbor is not in unreality, not a real idea, then we really let that into oneself too. To heal the situation has to include everything that is going on, not just oneself. But one has to, again, as we say, identify ourself with God and all others with God. That's the admission to oneself, really. That's the conviction. That's the spiritual conviction we have to have. That's the that's the word I'm looking for, conviction. There might be another term there. But that is what are the responsibility.
I've often wondered, who is our neighbor?
Yes. Okay. We would say...
Everybody our neighbor?
Well, what do you feel? Let's have you say. Dick is questioning there, to love one's neighbor as oneself is a divine idea. But this idea can never be seen, felt, nor understood through the physical senses. He was wondering there what the concept of neighbor may be?
Like-mindedness.
Like-mindedness?
Mm-hmm. Well, whatever and whoever we are conscious of.
Okay.
Our neighbor, whomever.
All right. Any other sense of neighbor? Well, I think that's what one would feel. It would be a neighbor is certainly someone close to us, huh? To love one's neighbor as oneself. The neighbor really is oneself. Yes.
Isn't this anyone that we come in contact with?
Yes.
Talking on a day-to-day person that you come into contact.
Yes.
Talking in a universal sense where you're...
All of it, Sandy. And I think the point is, it's to love... I think what John is saying is right. It's a likeness, see? To love one neighbor as oneself. That neighbor is really that one principle, infinitely individualized, yet still remaining the one principle.
Hmm? Have you felt that standing in the way?
As oneself. You love your neighbor as one's self, meaning that one principle infinitely individualizes itself, yet still remains a one principle. We all are that one principle in expression. We all really are of the same ego God. We are all that one ego, infinitely individualized, yet still remaining the one ego. Actually, there's no me and you. It's just God in expression. And I think that's what that's trying to bring out. To love one's neighbor as oneself. It is ourselves. Actually, when we see the neighbor, we see ourselves.
It's the highest idea of oneself.
Yeah, it's the highest idea of oneself, really.
That's standing faithful.
Yes, and therefore one is really blasting oneself and God, because it's all God. So if we are God in operation and the neighbor is God in operation, that neighbor is oneself.
What if they're not God in operation?
But everything is.
She's trying to bring out. You
have to see it. Yes, Michael?
Yeah, well, in the community of nations, there's neighbors amongst nations.
Yeah, there's neighbors amongst nations, yes.
So that's more collective.
That's a more collective than we see the neighbor, the nations as an idea of God. We see it's an ideational universe, an ideational earth, an ideational all mankind. It's all God in operation. It's all the one self, God. And it's what it's asking us to see.
Could you kind of think of it maybe as a trinity? There's the self, there's God, and then there's something that isn't those two, and that's the neighbor. And so those three all together are really just God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all God going on, right? It's all that one self. However it expresses itself, it's still God. Okay.
People in Los Angeles, they're rioting.
What, dear?
Even those people in Los Angeles that did the rioting.
Yes, absolutely.
See them that way too.
Behold in science a perfect man. And at this point, to stay on where we are, as the eternal reality of God, as the real idea. That's what seems to be here. Nothing is real and eternal but God and its idea. That's the only reality going on. Okay, let's go on now to the Annie Mag... chapter, and look on page 103.16. There's just one reference in this chapter. And there, she says, the maximum of good is the infinite God in his idea, the all in all. Evil is a suppositional lie. Well, we saw that then together. So this chapter is bringing out another point, that idea is the maximum of good. Well, Dick certainly had us look up the reference of good, and we saw that good is a whole self-operating, self-regulating dimensional structure to what is good. So here, the idea is of God and his idea is the maximum good going on. So we write that down. And so you see how each idea is bringing out yet another tone about idea? Here, God and its idea is the maximum of good. In Christian Science versus Spiritualism, it was the eternal, real reality. In Atonement and Eucharist, it was a true idea. You see, every chapter brings out yet another aspect of idea. All right, Science, Theology, and Medicine, 109.6. It says, it'll actually go on up the page. At 4, Christian Science reveals incontrovertibly that mind is all in all, that the only realities are the divine mind and idea. This great fact is not, however, seen to be supported by sensible evidence until its divine principle is demonstrated by healing the sick and thus proved absolute and divine. This proof once seen, no other conclusion can be reached. So she's saying here at this point, Christian Science reveals incontrovertibly that mind is all in all, that the only realities are the divine mind and idea. So again, that sense in that that's the only reality is the divine mind and idea. Okay? So we keep and remember that.
The first and the last references in that chapter emphasize that.
The only reality, yes. Yes, okay, let's take a look. So we'd like us to look then at the last reference on 123.3. Is that it?
In the whole chapter, 151.27. Not just in the subsection.
Sorry?
Medicine.
Oh, okay, sorry. All right. Sue would like us to look at page 151.27, taking the whole chapter in, all right? 151.27, she says she thinks she feels that same tonality there.
It starts at 26, all that really exists.
Okay.
Right back there.
All right, so on...
The only reality and all that really exists.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's take a look at that one on 26. Oh, yeah. All that really exists is the divine mind and idea. Well, I felt the same thing. I got the sense in this chapter that all that really matters is principle and its idea. Nothing else matters.
I think that's real.
It's the only thing going on. So my epitome was there that all that matters is principle and its idea, mind and its idea. It's the only thing that matters. Very good. All right, and then we go on to physiology, 167.25. You see how, just showing what we're doing in the light of text interpretation, you can see how this is the scientist in us. I always like, again, where Max Kapler said, we have those two roles. One is the scientist that rolls up the sleeves and really gets into the textbook and analyzes through it, huh? And then the next one, after it has gained the exact letter, because she says, how do we progress most rapidly in Christian Science? First, to gain the exact letter, the analysis. That's what we're doing, the scientific text interpretation. Then when we sit back after gaining the exact letter, we can put up our feet and flow through these references and get the spirit of it, huh? So those two go together. The scientist, what is reality? And point two, how do I become one with reality? We're now doing the scientist, the analysis, the exact letter. Then we'll sit back with our findings and look out into the beautiful space here and then become one with it. Huh? So it's always those two offices in text interpretation. I think they're both fun, so. All right, 167.25. There is but one way, namely God in his idea, which leads to spiritual being. All right? So there's only one way. Let's see. All right, and what is it doing? I think there's the important point here is, there's but one way, namely God in its idea, one way to what? bringing forth what?
Spiritual.
Or spiritual idea. I felt that was the pith of the chapter, actually, here, that God, not matter, brings forth the idea, or there is only one way, namely God and its idea, which leads to a spiritual being, or which brings forth the idea. God, not matter, brings forth the idea. And there's only one way, namely God and his idea, which brings forth spiritual being. You know, this chapter, right away, starts out in the very beginning, how it says that you cannot serve two masters, huh? You'll either love the one or despise the other. There's only one way, and that is God and its idea, which will bring out the spiritual idea. Only God is going to bring it forth. Well, let's see if that holds true. 191. The brain can give no idea of God. Well, you see there, that holds up to the point that there's only one way. God brings forth the idea. The brain can't bring forth the idea. There's only one way, God, if we're going to experience idea. All right, let's see, 12. Yeah, there it is. All right, so we start up there on 8. As a material theoretical life basis is found to be a misapprehension of existence, the spiritual and divine principle of man dawns upon human thought and leads it to where the young child was, even to the birth of a new old idea, to the spiritual sense of being and of what life includes. Thus the whole earth will be transformed by truth on its pinions of light, chasing away the darkness of error. What tone do you get there?
This is sort of a similar tone because it's the birth, yeah. It's the way.
Yeah, the birth is the way. And what is the way? What brings forth the idea? Principle man dawns on human thought and leads it to where the young child was. See, principle brings forth the new idea, doesn't it? There's only one way, and that's principle. That divine principle of man dawns on human thought and leads it to where the young child was, even to the birth of the new old idea. So it's principle that brings forth the idea. Not matter, not brain. Brain can never bring forth the idea. Brain can never give birth to the idea called man. Okay? Let's see here. Well, I think, let's see, where were we on that point there? 191. All right, let's try 194.4. Starting on 2. Reviewing this brief experience, I cannot fail to discern the coincidence of the spiritual idea of man with the divine mind. Mm-hmm. Okay. 195.15. Whatever furnishes the semblance of an idea governed by its principle furnishes food for thought. Mm-hmm. Through astronomy, natural history, chemistry, music, mathematics, thought passes naturally from effect back to cause. All right, so whatever furnishes a semblance of an idea, what does? Governed by its principle, furnishes food for thought. Okay, let's go to 211 and see if we can... We, in text interpretation, we just read through all the references quickly and get out the tonality. We don't try to squeeze everything out of every single reference. That's one of the points of text interpretation. You just want to listen spiritually for the overall melody that's being brought out. It's on 11. Whoever is incompetent to explain soul would be wise not to undertake the explanation of body. Life is, always has been, and ever will be, independent of matter. For life is God, and man is the idea of God, not formed materially, but spiritually, and not subject to decay. Well, there you see it. Again, that God brings forth the idea. God gives birth to the idea. Matter can't give birth to the idea. Brain can't give birth to the idea. I think that's the main point of physiology. So I think we could put that down. God, principle, brings forth the idea. Matter can't give birth to the idea. Okay, then we go on to footsteps of truth. We know as the Christ, as science, we listen in a general way, as I say in text interpretation, it's always to read through the references quickly and then gain the tonality of what they're all saying together. So 205.20, it's talking there. Befogged in error, the error of believing, starting up on 15. Befogged in error, the error of believing that matter can be intelligent for good or evil. We can catch clear glimpses of God only as the mists disperse, or as they melt into such thinness that we perceive the divine image in some word or deed, which indicates the true idea, the supremacy and reality of good, the nothingness and unreality of evil. So what is it saying here, in a way? Befogged in error. We're befogged in error. We're befogged in these beliefs of believing that matter can be intelligent or good. So somehow we're in the belief realm here. And it says we can catch clear glimpses of God only as the mist disperses, or as they melt into such thinness that we perceive the divine image in some word or deed which indicates the true idea. So when I went through this, I felt this was the pith, that to see through the beliefs or the myths or the error to behold the divine idea. Christian Footsteps of Truth always has the accentuation how our structure of consciousness determines our phenomenon. So here she's showing that befogged in air, we're all surrounded in air, she says, but we can catch the clear glimpse, even though we're in the belief, we can catch a clear glimpse of God only as the mist disperses, or as they melt into the thinness that we perceive the divine image in some word or deed, which indicates the true idea. So in all the mist and everything that goes on, we still can behold the idea.
And that's true. That's true. That's free from imperfection or mixture.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Up to this point, that it is. Yeah. That. What's free?
Free of imperfection.
The idea. The true idea.
Free of imperfection or mixture. That mist.
Yeah. Oh, I see. John, you're saying that the mist.
I say that the truth there is free. Truth is free of imperfection or mixture.
Yes.
You can see through the mist. You can disperse that to the true understanding of truth, which is free of any imperfections or mixture.
Yeah, yeah. But the idea is free.
The true idea.
The true idea. Yeah, sure. Because we're this far in the footsteps of truth, and we've already seen that is the true idea, which is real, huh? Which is the maximum of good, and that's the only thing that matters. And that principle brings it forth, and that now we can see through all the beliefs with that. If we stick to that, that's going to enable us to see through the beliefs. Okay. Let's just leave it at that, because that is the pith, and we do want to get through the chapter. So I felt that was the main point. Now let's go on and pick out a few points in creation. Let's get 255.17. The human form or physical finiteness cannot be made the basis of any true idea of the infinite Godhead. So the idea is of God. This is that chapter that talks about the ideational universe. So it says that the human form or physical finiteness cannot be made the basis of any true idea. So the human form cannot be made the basis of the idea. We can't go out and reason from effect to cause, can we? We can't go off from the human form and say that's what idea is. That's good, because in the ideational universe, always when we talk about idea, we always think of man as idea, we think of the human form, don't we? And this being that idea, that creation constitutes ideas, and that man is the idea of God, don't we often think of the human form and idea? We always want to bring back the idea back to the human form. And in this particular chapter it says, no, idea is of God. It's the image and form of God, and it's infinite. It isn't bringing it into a human form would make it finite. That's why she says the human form or physical finiteness cannot be made the basis of any true idea of the infinite Godhead. So that human form is too finite to call it idea. That idea is only an idea of God, and that idea is infinite. So when you think of idea and the ideational creation, please, she says, don't relate it to the human form, because we call that man, huh? That the creation constitutes idea. And don't mix your paradigms. That's so hard to do.